Okay, let's get going here. Hour number three. Another day, another roundup of the worldwide pandemic and its ongoing move in the country. We're getting a lot of really interesting stories now. They're changing in texture, some of them. The numbers continue to be as projected by Dr. Henry Nyman. No surprise there. But the texture of the stories and the news itself changing a little bit. It's perceptible. Here you go. The Centers for Disease Control, this is one of the stories I'm talking about, admits that cash bonuses to hospitals drove up the coronavirus death statistics. This is from, a Mercola's website. That's a very interesting story. I haven't been able to read the whole thing yet, but I will. Coronavirus has been termed now in another study to be not the main cause, the primary cause of death in about 70% of those who die who are infected. It's major organ failure, I'm sure, or pre-existing comorbidities, but the virus certainly doesn't help any of those. So you could make the argument that it is the main trigger cause of death. But this is what I'm talking about, a little different spin on some of these things. 22 cases. That's it. Allegedly confirmed after about 500,000 bikers whooped it up in Sturgis, South Dakota. So far, there are very little spread of the virus, at least so far, among those who went up for the festivities. Don't argue. If you're in a store and you work in a retail store, a market, for example, and someone comes in without a mask, the CDC is warning stores to instruct their employees not to argue with anti-maskers. Leave them alone. They're teaching them new techniques to try to deal with it. People have been beaten up and hit, and fist fights break out. So this is another new bit of texture. The pandemic, as we know, is causing the shutdown forever of lots and lots of businesses, primarily restaurants in many cases, over 235,000 by one count. What's going to happen? Many of those viable locations will be bought up by chain restaurants. They'll just step right in and take over the lease and clean it up and repaint it and start selling chicken or burgers or whatever else it is. So that's something that's already pretty well known. What else do I have here? Hydroxychloroquine all over again is one story. The Washington Post is now trashing the blood plasma, coronavirus treatment after Trump announces a big breakthrough. So that's the Washington Post against the Trump administration. What else? Oh, there's a very interesting story in Argentina that most people don't know. I have a couple of friends down there, and they're really under a lot of lockdown pressure in Argentina. I mean, they're not messing around. You are suspected. You two-weeked in your residence, and you don't come out. That's it. You're there. You have people bring you supplies. So there you go. Just a few headlines. Again, take your pick, read them, make up your own decision. That's what journalism is all about. We have Henry Nyman standing by. Henry, did you have a good day today?
Yeah, it was an interesting day. That paper I had mentioned yesterday about the case from Hong Kong who had been infected twice came out today, and the sequences were made available today, or might have been yesterday, but I found them early this morning. So I got a chance to go through that data, and I'll go through some of the details.
Recombination?
It's got a lot of attention.
Not yet.
This initial one, it sets the stage for recombination. That's generally how these changes happen, and the changes mm-hmm. are starting to build, and they're getting to a level where you know, the virus will have a pretty easy time of resisting the immune response of the general population or the vaccines. And I'll get into that detail when I
Very interesting statement you just made. So we're not writing the vaccines off completely, but you're telling us that the viruses are going to become smarter and more resilient, and a vaccine may be less effective. I think that's what I heard.
Right, right. It's essentially going to parallel what happens with flu. I mean, the people get the flu, but it doesn't mean they're immune and don't get the flu. Subsequent times, they take vaccines, they still get the flu, and it'll be the same mm-hmm. thing with the coronavirus. It's a cold virus. It can change very quickly, and it's now well established in the human population, so there's a lot of virus out there. A lot of variation, which I'll touch on when I describe the two sequences that came from this one patient. Okay. And it's going to be a pretty major issue. And the headlines you went over were all kind of going in one direction. And I think that you can figure out why by just looking at the calendar or looking at the polls. Either one essentially sure. says the election's coming up. Trump's yep. behind, and there's a lot of effort to downplay the pandemic because his handling of the pandemic was so bad. So they want to say, oh, there aren't that many cases, which is absurd. I mean, you can see it on excess deaths. You don't need a doctor to diagnose it other than to say that person is dead. And the excess deaths are based upon death certificates. They're not based upon any testing or anyone saying, oh, that person had the virus, but I think he died from, heart disease caused by the virus. But, we don't know for sure it's caused by the virus. So we'll just say it wasn't caused by the virus. It was he had a heart attack. And, the evidence for the heart attacks and the excess heart attacks to New York was pretty dramatic. The heart attacks paralleled with the virus, and that's what they do in Russia. Russia has a low death rate because they get doctors to go and say, oh, no, they didn't die from COVID. They died from something else, and it's not a COVID death. And it's pure propaganda. It's utter nonsense. That you can look at the excess deaths. You can see this large peak. It's the type of peak that you see in the 1918 pandemic. That was always cited. All you have to do is look at how many people died. You can see the waves of the pandemic because they stand out over and above. And it's the same thing. Although this isn't behaving like Trump expected it to. So it's not really paralleling the flu season as far as the deaths, especially in the U.S. The deaths started in April here. And you can see the outbreaks and you can see the excess deaths, and they don't parallel when flu out excess deaths happen, which generally are limited to a small number of instances when it's a very bad flu season, and then the deaths are generally confined to usually around the calendar year. So they're in January when it's coldest in the Northern Hemisphere and the number of cases is the highest. And occasionally it'll get above and show excess deaths. Usually it'll get just above the line. COVID is well above the line. It's already starting to, it already went down and is going back up again. Today it was over 1,000 deaths again. So I mean, during the week, there's over 1,000 people that U.S. citizens that die every day. And these nonsense reports out there. Oh, we don't think it was really COVID, That's all nonsense. And that's all based upon the fact that they want to downplay the significance of the outbreak. They don't want to acknowledge that it's the worst pandemic since 1918. It's got a shot at beating 1918. The number of deaths are, it's like 180,000 in the U.S. alone.
Right.
And those numbers are scheduled to go up. So all the stories you said, the tenor really has to do with how badly Trump is doing in the polls and how desperate he is, which is the same thing with the antibody.
Henry, politics.
Yeah,
that's what it is.
It's the same thing. It's the same thing with the antibodies. He went and he strong-armed the FDA, got them to go ahead and say that go from, well, we don't really think we have enough data to, oh, data looks good. There's no new data between that. The only thing between we don't have enough and it looks good is a Trump tweet. So he strong-armed them on the convalescent plasma. And there's growing concern that he's going to do the same thing with the pandemic. He's going to turn us into a Russia. That's what Russia's doing. I mean, all the things that Russia are doing, I mean, I think that's what he talks about when he talks to Putin. He said, I got this major problem, just like you guys do. You got all these cases. I got them. You have so such a lower number of deaths. How do you do that? And he said, oh, we just get the doctors to say they did die of COVID. And all of a sudden, there's U.S. stories. Oh, they didn't really die of COVID. And it's and it's the same thing with the vaccine. Oh, that's only done phase one. You said you're ready to start selling this vaccine. You're taking orders. You're going to be giving it to your populace when there's only been 100 people that have been tested. That's a phase one. You need thousands, tens of thousands to do a phase three. What happened to that? Oh, we're not going to worry. We're going to do the phase three, but we don't have to wait for the
results.
There's
no way, Henry, they could have a vaccine properly trialed and tested for what, another year? Oh, it's got to take time.
No, it's
how long?
It's not necessary. They could have it by the beginning of the year if they have enough people enrolled. And it sounds like they're getting the people enrolled, but it takes a while to get them enrolled. And unfortunately, the lead vaccines are in the category of two injections. So they with like a 28-day gap between the two. So because it takes two injections, they're not going to really get any people enrolled and started and fully immunized for a couple of months. So they need that, and then they need several months to basically find out whether it's going to be adverse effects or to find out whether it actually protects. So the way they have it set up right now is they're waiting to see if these people get infected, and if they get infected, if they either don't get infected or they get infected at a lower rate than people that didn't get the vaccine. And so that takes time. And so it's that's the time frame, assuming everything works. There's adverse effects. It's going to be back to the drawing board. And if it doesn't give that much protection, then that's going to be an issue because there are several trials, but
your finger on something that no one is talking about but you. I have heard it nowhere else. The simple fact that the vaccine and the virus could change perspective to the extent that the virus would really render the vaccine less efficacious than it was suspected it was going to be. That's what you're saying.
Yeah, and okay, well, we'll get into the study. There is already evidence for that. I mean, it's an explanation.
Oh, really?
The sample size is too small to say exactly what happened. But basically, this is a 33-year-old male in good health from Hong Kong who got infected initially in March. And he did have symptoms. It didn't really last that long. He was sick for a few days, and then his symptoms subsided. They initially looked to see if he had antibodies. They looked early a couple of times. He was negative, and the longest time they waited was 10 days. Mm-hmm. And he was still negative. So they don't really know what kind of immune response he generated to the first infection. But he was symptomatic, and he did recover. And the sequence showed that virus that he was infected with was the V clade. The V clade is called V because one of the open reading frames changes the amino acid to a valine. It goes from and so it's called the V clade. That particular clade was prominent in Iran. So those cases.
Explain the
that
word.
Outran
define the word clade, Henry. Excuse me. Define the word clade for our listeners, please.
Okay. It's basically you have the sequence of the virus, and there's software that'll basically make a family tree. It'll put the ones that are identical or close to each other in one group. They'll branch off, and they'll branch off if they've got, you know, significant differences, especially if you've got a bunch of sequences that all have the same difference. So if they have this one difference, or a set of changes that are all shared, if you do a phylogenetic tree, you'll see them branch off and form their own little group. And so they're basically classified that way so that you find a bunch of isolates that have the same mutation or the same set of mutations. So the initial naming of these were one letter names, and they were because one of their mutation actually changes the sequence, and it changes what and it's named after kind of the mutated change, and so it'll change. In this case, for the V, there was a in the N gene, there's an alanine, and that change. Actually, I take it back. It's in the open reading frame 3A, and normally that's a G, and it got changed to a V. So because they got a change in the nucleotide sequence that changes the protein, they named it after the change protein. So instead of having the G, it's got a V there, so it called it the V clade. The same thing happened with the Italian lineage. The Italian lineage had a change in the spike protein. And the spike protein at position 614 in the protein, it changed the D to a G. So it's called the G clade. So the one that was in Italy is called the G clade because it's got a G in the spike protein instead of a D. And the one that was in Iran is called the V clade because in open reading frame 3A, it changed the G to a V. So it's named after what the mutated sequence is. And then it'll typically have a few additional ones that define it. And they aren't necessarily going to change the protein, but they're going to be at the RNA level, and it's going to be consistent. It'll have these few changes, but they'll all map to the same place when you do a phylogenetic tree, because all the ones in a given branch will have these two or three or four changes, and they'll all have those same two or three or four changes, and that'll define what the clade is. So you can tell them apart, and then you can see how they change. Sometimes they'll pick up additional mutations, and it'll change the name. So the G clade, which is the one that's taking over the world, which is the Italian strain, it subsequently picked up additional mutations. So there's a G, there's a GH, there's a GR, and the R's and the H's have to do with other mutations that involve other genes. And so it's got the same original gene, but now it's got one more or one more set, and they form different branches on that phylogenetic tree. So they all have the same root. They all have the same changes that were in the original gene, but some of them have additional ones tacked onto that, so they start branching off from the original.
All right.
So
you'll find
the
story in the coronavirus news section from Henry. He's put it together. It says clade V and G sequences from same Hong Kong patient, 33 male, collected 5 months apart. The story's right there from Recombinomics. Go ahead.
So the first one was this clade V, and he developed that in March, and then recently in August this month he went to Spain via the UK, and because he had traveled, when he came back to Hong Kong, he was screened because, you know, they're concerned about, you know, the virus coming into Hong Kong. And they're especially concerned about the virus coming from Europe into or the United States, for that matter, because there's a lot of the Italian strain. And they know that the Italian strain, which is the G clade, is taking over the world. The like 90% of the sequences now are G clade. So that's what caused the major outbreaks in the U.S. That's what's causing the outbreaks in Brazil. That's what's causing the outbreaks in Russia. That's what's causing the outbreaks in India. All of the countries with the largest number of cases, and actually several other ones in South America, Peru and Chile, they all are due to the G clade. So the G clade is literally taking over the world, and it's not quite as dominant in countries in Asia because they basically had the original Wuhan change, the Wuhan strain that didn't have these changes that I mentioned that gave rise to the G or the V. And it was a little bit easier to control. And so once they got it under control, they didn't want the G clade showing up there, and due to their country, what it's done to the countries in North and South America. Well, North America, the U.S., I mean, it's getting pretty bad in Mexico now, too, but it's not as bad in Canada. So they screened him, and he was positive. And but he wasn't symptomatic. So he was asymptomatic, and he tested positive, and they isolated the virus from him this month when he returned and was positive. And they sequenced that. And when they sequenced that, it wasn't the V clade, which is what he was originally infected with 5 months earlier. It was the G clade. It was the one from, you know, the Italian version. And so there actually were 24 differences between the two sequences. So if you lined up the two sequences and you said, does it have the same letter at a given position for both isolates? The answer was no at 24 of the positions. So 24 of the positions had a change at the nucleotide level. And of those 24, 13 of them gave rise to changes at the protein level. So it was very easy to distinguish these two sequences, both with regard to how many differences there were between the two, as well as the fact that they segregated out on a phylogenetic tree. One was in the group that was the G clade, so there were a lot of other sequences that were on the same branch that it was on, and these were all the Italian lineage, and the other was the V, and that was the clade that was commonly found in Iran and others, you know, European countries initially. That's where it got into the news and was causing significant outbreaks. And so if you just looked at the two sequences, you knew that this person was infected two times. It wasn't that they were infected once and then they tested negative and they didn't have symptoms and the virus hung around. And then all of a sudden they tested them a month or two later and they got a positive. And then they, without a sequence, they couldn't really say, well, did they get infected a second time, or is this the original infection that kind of popped up again? And we got negatives earlier and there's a little bit more of it, or for whatever reason, we get a better sample. It goes from negative to positive. The sequence made it clear that this person was infected by two different viruses, and they were like 5 months apart. And it was no doubt about it because of the large number of differences. Now, there was a lot of talk about this paper, and, you know, people were saying, and a lot of the talk was kind of, you could see there was a political kind of background that, you know, those that didn't want to talk about the pandemic and wanted to play down the pandemic, they said, well, you know, it's neither a good thing nor a bad thing because there's nothing to worry about with this virus. Only 1% of the population gets infected by it. It's not a big deal. It doesn't matter. You know, neither version are much of a issue. And this guy happened to get infected twice, but who cares? You know, and then there are other ones that say, well, this is a good thing because the second time they got infected, they were asymptomatic. So even though it was a different clade, the fact that the second one was asymptomatic indicates that the immunity he had against the first one helped with the second one, and it basically didn't prevent him from being infected, but it did prevent him from being symptomatic. And so the virus really wasn't causing any problems. He didn't even know he had it. The only reason it was detected is that he came back from Europe to Hong Kong and they tested him because they wanted to make sure he didn't have a virus. And then the third group said, well, this is bad because it says that even if you're infected and even if you are symptomatic and even if you recover, that doesn't mean that you're going to have immunity for any length of time. That this person basically, in 5 months later, he was already infected a second time.
Even though it's a different clay, it doesn't matter. I got it.
And it wasn't even from a vaccine, because usually the vaccines don't give quite as good of the immune response as a natural infection.
Well, this is not good news.
So they're saying that, you know, he got infected, he was symptomatic, and in spite of all that, he got infected again. And then the question is, well, why did he get infected again? Did he get infected again because he didn't have that much antibody to begin with? And it's not really clear, because they only tested him out to 10 days. And a lot of times it takes about 30 days to get your, right, your antibody levels up to more of a peak level to see what you ended at. And, but when he got infected the second time, the initial tests they took were negative. So that indicates that if he did generate a strong response to the first infection, 5 months later, it wasn't detectable. That basically, initially, he didn't have any antibodies. And then on day 10, he started to get antibodies, indicated that he did start to get detectable antibodies to the second infection. But those antibodies weren't from the first infection. They would have been from the second infection. And then the other question is, well, the vaccines are targeting the spike protein. And so the question is, of these changes, like I said, there were 13 changes that were different at the protein level, not just a silent mutation, so that you could distinguish the RNA from one from the RNA from the other, but it didn't really change the protein, so it really wasn't going to have much of an effect. These were changes at the protein level. So of those 13, were any of them in the spike protein? Well, you already know that at least one of them was at the spike protein, because the G clade has a change in the spike protein at position 614. The D changes to G, and that's why it's called G. So I knew that at least one of the 13 changes was in the spike protein. But as it turns out, 4 of those 13 changes are in the spike protein. So that's an indication that the mutations in the spike protein are starting to build up. And the original V clade didn't have any changes in the spike protein. It had this change in this open reading frame 3A. The spike protein was the same as the original spike protein from Wuhan. So as it turns out, one of those 4 changes is in the V clade. It's in the earlier infection, and that now had a change in the spike protein that was actually change. It was at position 780, and it changed the E that's normally there to a Q. So there was one change that was picked up in the V clade. But then it turns out there were 2 more changes that were picked up in the G clade. So not only did it have the change at position 614, where the D changed to a G, it also had a change at position 18, where L changed to F, and a position 222, where A changed to V.
So you did all this work today? You did all this today?
Well, this is... I looked at it today, but the paper actually has the table of all the changes.
I see.
So I didn't have to do all the changes. So I'm just reading from the paper. The paper came out today, and
got it.
And it's got a supplemental table, and it's got all of the changes listed. So so the point is that the virus, both viruses have changed from the original Wuhan sequence. And the one that's on the V clade has one change in the spike protein. And the G clade now has 3 changes in the spike protein. And it's possible that those additional changes made a difference, or it's possible that just the original one that gave it its name, the D changing to G, was enough to overcome whatever immunity was gained by having the first infection of the B-clade. And so that would be a concern if it was due to the fact that the immune response against the B-clade didn't give enough of a cross-reactivity with the G-clade to prevent him from being infected the second time, just, you know, with a relatively short time frame. It's only 5 months later. That's an indication that there may be an issue with the initial vaccines, because the initial vaccines, the ones that are furthest along and are going to be available first, and are going to not only be available first, but Trump may make them available even before they've been fully tested, all use the original Wuhan sequence. So they're using the sequence that came out initially, and it doesn't have any, and that sequence doesn't have any of these four changes in the spike protein. So it's going to differ by one change with this V-clade that infected this 33-year-old back in March, and it's got three changes that affected the same 33-year-old in August. And so it's possible that the vaccine won't work that well on the G-clade, which is basically taken over the world. So the most of the people, especially in these countries that have essentially runaway virus, where it's pretty much out of control, which includes the United States, uh-huh. Most of the virus that's circulating in the U.S. now is the G-clade. And it's not clear how well the vaccine against the original Wuhan strain are going to react with the G-clade. But then the other piece of bad news is that whatever immune response was generated back in March wasn't detected when this guy was infected in August. So in August, they looked initially to see how much antibody he had, assuming right. He had some antibody from the first infection, and he didn't have any. So that indicates that whatever antibody he did generate was not detectable just 5 months later. And so it indicates that even though it was a natural infection, he didn't really make that much antibody. So that kind of indicates that this isn't going to be easy. And I think that this is much like what I described for swine flu. There was swine flu here in Pittsburgh. There really wasn't a whole lot of activity in the spring of 2009. And then when school started, there were symptomatic students that had a cough, but they weren't that sick and they weren't being tested. And when I asked my daughters, who were in high school and middle school at the time, you know, whether a lot of kids were coughing, they said, oh, yeah, there's something going around. The kids are coughing, but it isn't that bad. And they just call it the crud that's going around. And kids weren't missing school. They weren't getting tested. And it kind of ran through the school at the beginning in late August, early September. But then in October, it kind of hit the schools with a vengeance. And kids did have fevers.
I remember.
They ended up going to the nurse's office. They ended up getting sent home. The absenteeism for both students and teachers got up to 10-15%. Some of the schools had trouble staying open. Yeah. I had kids playing soccer. soccer players generally don't miss games for anything. And they were, I mean, it wasn't a lot. It would be a couple players out for each game. And that's highly unusual, to have any players out for illness. And and it just kind of went through the population. And I had mentioned this before, but the UPMC actually did a study where they tested the serum samples that had been collected in largely in the fall, I think. And they found that 40% of the samples from school-aged children had swine flu antibodies, and they could distinguish the swine flu antibodies from seasonal flu antibodies, and because the swine flu had not been, you know, circulating previously, and so they had an assay set up to pick up those antibodies, and they got a positive in 40% of the cases. And this was before the vaccine was available, because once people start getting vaccinated, they're going to have antibodies to the vaccine, and they're not going to be able to distinguish those antibodies from those that are due to an infection. But that was fairly quickly, because if you recall, that outbreak started early in the fall. It started, you know, it started as soon as school started, really. So there were initial cases in the South in August, early August, actually. And then the numbers started, you know, going up dramatically, like in October. And that's early for the numbers to go up dramatically. Usually October is when the first cases start to show up. And then the numbers go up dramatically in January, February. That's usually when you have your peak activity of flu cases. So this, in the fall came early, and they were able to, like in November, see that 40% of the school age patients actually had already been infected with the virus and had sufficiently high levels of antibodies to be picked up by that test. And so, that's what I think is going to happen with COVID. That the fall was, the spring was just kind of, they call it a herald wave. It's just kind of letting you know that the virus is out there, it'll let you know that you got a pandemic. In this case, it'll let you know that the virus was lethal and it's killed 180,000 Americans, and it's killed, I think, a few million people already worldwide. And but that's not the main show. That's just feeling its way around. And then in the fall, when it gets to be more, conditions are more conducive for the virus. There's not as much sunlight, which kills the virus. There's more congregating indoors because it's cold outside. And that really sets up the conditions for the transmission to be more efficient. And then instead of getting, you know, one area has some cases, another area has some cases, pretty much all the areas have cases by, you know, October, November or so. It kind of depends on whether it's on the earlier side or the later side. I think it'll be on the earlier side because the virus transmits very
that
easily.
Makes perfect sense.
And kids going back to school are going to set the stage. There have been a few reports of some schools with very high levels. I think University of Alabama had something like 300 positives on the initial testing, and now they've got 500 more. So I think they've got 800-900 positives. This is 800 or 900 under quarantine because they're contact. This is 800 or 900 that are tested positive into one school, and it's making it very difficult for them to have in class anything. And that's probably a good example of a school that's in the South in a state that's got a lot of activity, and that you bring the students together and they have, you know, whatever kind of activities ongoing, getting ready for school, and the virus just starts to spread. And, you know, as far as your example with, you know, the motorcycle, the Sturgis or whatever, I mean, it's a little bit on the early side. You're going to have X number of cases that they're going to start, and then they're going to give rise to, you know, a second wave, that the people that got infected initially are going to have other people. And you're not going to pick those up yet. It hasn't really been long enough since they right. had the event.
22 so and, far, that's it. But we're watching.
Yeah, it's early. I mean, that's the other example. There, you know, whenever they went, oh, there's not that much going on. It's kind of like the second wave. You know, Pence goes and says it in June, there's no second wave, which is supposed to come in the fall. And then he says in July, there's no second wave, which is supposed to come in the fall. So, I mean, he's looking before it's supposed to show up and say, oh, it isn't here, and, you know, implying that it's not going to come. But, you know, all you have to do is look at the calendar and know that, you know, August isn't the fall. It either is July or either is June. And it, calendar tells you the same thing about Trump's prediction that, you know, it's going to be gone by April. Now, that didn't happen for 2020 and probably not going to happen for 2021 either. And he's assuming that it'll be gone sometime because he doesn't know the difference between an epidemic and a pandemic. So, you know, like I said, the numbers for today, there were over... 1,100 deaths, 1,128 so far. California's lagging on their time, so that number might go up. There's the number of actual cases, though, is a little bit lower. It's not clear how much of that is due to the lower testing. The testing frequency is down a bit in California. I think it's also down in Florida. And there were only like 3,000 cases so far from California, but that was as of something like 3:30 this afternoon. Like I say, they normally would have at least an update by 7 o'clock, and it let's see, they got it by 4:36. And they just updated it. Okay, yeah, the numbers have gone up to 5,742 cases in California. Before, they only had 3,000. So they've added 2,700 more cases. And now they're up to 151 deaths today. Earlier, they had less than 100. So the deaths are around 1,200 deaths, and the number of cases, a little over 40,000 cases today. So the cases are down a little bit. The deaths are not. It's still the, 1,000 to 50 to 1,400 is the range it's been at. And it's well into that range again today. You know, during the week, that's where it's at. It does get below that over the weekend. And so the virus is still there. The numbers are starting to be reported in the schools. The other issue that's still outstanding is the post office. I didn't get a chance to talk about that right after there was the
you got 2 minutes.
Go ahead. Yesterday. And it's still not clear. There's some promises have been made. Not a whole lot of information is forthcoming as to who ordered the employees not to do overtime and to limit the number of trips, and got the trucks going out empty and because they had to leave on time. So the mail, usually they would wait for the mail and put it in the truck. They wouldn't send out an empty truck, but they had been doing that. And he made promises that wasn't really sure that he could keep those promises. And they asked for documentation as to whether they did any studies or any analysis of what kind of impact all of these cuts were going to have on the service. And it didn't sound like they did anything. I mean, the numbers went down dramatically as soon as he stepped in. And he's only been there for 60 days. So he did all that damage in a two-month period. He didn't do any studies to see what would happen. He just said, well, we're not going to do this or we're not going to do that. This is going to save money sometime in the future. And, you know, the effect it would have on the service, he didn't really care because he's got money invested in competitors. And he'd like to see the post office go private anyway. So he says he's going to reverse some of those things. The sorters, it sounds like they're not usable, because even if they just unplugged them, it sounds like they threw away the barcode readers and you can't really operate.
Well, they didn't throw, that's not all they threw away, Henry. They threw away a brand new high-speed sorting machine that they had spent 2 months putting in one of the offices at somewhere in Washington State, and they were ordered to throw it out in a dumpster. A huge dumpster.
Exactly.
They threw it out.
It wasn't one. There were a bunch of them.
I only got pictures of this one, but yeah, it's outrageous. Yeah, it's probably $1 million machine.
Exactly. They're $1 million. They do something like 30 some odd letters per hour.
The postal workers are beyond enraged. That's all I can say. This DeJoy is acting like a thug, another thug. And I'm so sick of it.
He's on a mission. I mean, he's got his marching orders. It might not be in writing.
I understand. You're right. Yeah, you're correct.
He knew what the job was when he took statements out. Right.
Of course.
And that's why he took it. And that's why he appointed him. He was the wrecking ball. He was going to go in there.
He looks like it.
And actually, he got going on the primaries so that Trump could go and say, well, look, they did mailings for these primaries and X number of ballots got invalidated because they weren't returned by the deadline. And the only reason they weren't returned by the deadline is because the post office didn't deliver them. So they put them in the mailbox, but they basically arrived a week or two late. The deadline, and they were invalidated.
Yeah.
Okay.
All right.
So
well,
sure we stand.
Tough times. Crazy.
Well, you can do another update tomorrow.
Good job.
Where we stand.
Thank you,
okay,
Henry.
All right. Take care. Okay. Good night.
And thanks to all of you, wherever you are. It's not a lot of fun. We're doing the best we can to keep you fully up to date, though, on things that are generally of interest. And missing a few, but we're pretty good. All right. Talk to you tomorrow night. Take care.